All right, welcome to the class on pitfalls, and we had a nice demonstration of several people stumbling over that, and I apologize for that, but it's hopefully it's a lesson for us teachers. There are times there are things that we're going to trip over. It happens, but hopefully if you saw someone do it or someone in front of you saw it and pointed it out to you, you were able to avoid that. And that's the goal of this class. Awareness of the common pitfalls is the first step to staying out of them. Doesn't mean you won't trip up on it, but at least if you were warned about it, it helps. When I grew up in Whiteville, Tennessee, there was in the church house, we had the auditorium going up in the center right in front of the front doors, and then down each side there was a stairway, and I think they've remodeled it since then, possibly. But I just remember that there was, as you're going down the stairway, there was just a low, you know how stairways are, they have this 90 degree angle there where the floor joists are. And walking down the stairs, it was just the right height where you would bang your head. It was probably about 6 feet exactly. And those who lived there would always just duck when they got to that place going down the steps. Even us little boys, we would duck too, even if it was 3 feet above our heads. But visitors would often hit their head on that beam, and I guess they had learned a lesson there as well. But those that lived there knew about it, and we just naturally ducked. So again, if you know about it, know these pitfalls, you're much more apt to avoid them. This topic tends to focus on the negative. Please don't let it discourage you. My goal is just to make you aware of them, so you can see them in coming in time. A pothole pitfall, so you can see it coming in time, so you can swerve and miss it. On the other hand, though, when I was 16 or 15, I went into Jackson to get my permit. My mom took me, and I was really excited about it. I think it was just soon after I turned 15, and I remember it was interstate driving there, and then as soon as I got my permit, I wanted to drive home, of course. And Mom was like, well, not on the interstate. Maybe once we get off the interstate. I don't think she wanted me to drive at all, but she finally relented to let me drive once we get off the interstate. Well, we got off the interstate, and she let me drive, and she was terrified, probably for good reason. And because of that, I was terrified too, I think. Normally, I had driven before around the farm, and I used to feel confident, but she was so scared. I was scared. It was kind of scary driving. So that's the other side of it. I don't want you to be so scared you're going to make mistakes that you can't even think clearly to drive at all or to teach. So don't be like that either. That's the other ditch. But we don't need to repeat all the mistakes of others. You've heard the saying, the only thing that we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. I hope you can learn from some of the mistakes that I've made. Let's pause for prayer. Dear God, I thank you again for being with us today. Thank you for each one of these teachers gathered here. Just help us, dear God, to look at, as we look at some of these mistakes, common mistakes that teachers make, I just pray that we could have the humility to own up to it when we make mistakes, and to make it right and keep going and be effective teachers in our classroom. Let's bless each one in a special way. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. There's one of my favorite verses in the Bible is a verse in Philippians chapter 2. It says, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became a teacher." Now that's not the right word, but that's, Jesus was a teacher. And he made himself of no reputation. Being a teacher is partly that. Many of the problems that teachers face stem from having pride in our hearts. How many of you are proud? Raise your hand, please. Okay, how many of you are humble? Well, y'all came to the right place here. No, that's kind of hard to define there. But I like what Larry said this morning. If you want to work on getting rid of pride, you've chosen the right job. It's hard to be a teacher for long without getting what's the word? Especially if you think you're really something, you'll pretty soon find out that you're not. Being a teacher is like living in a glass house. Everyone sees everything you do at school. The children go home and tell their parents about every mistake that you made. So you may as well just accept the fact that it's just going to be just going to be the way it is. So the first main area is a faulty self-concept there on your handouts. Faulty self-concept. Either thinking too much about yourself, or even the inverse pride, which is just trash talking yourself, or saying that I'm just a horrible, you know, maybe I play softball and I'm such a horrible softball player. And you're saying these things hoping someone else will say, oh, you're not that bad. You're actually pretty good. You know, we just say that. That's pride as well, just the same as bragging is. First one is wanting too much to be liked. All teachers want to be liked, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to be liked, but not at the expense of doing the right thing. Can you really be their friend? And this is maybe friend is not the right word. Maybe we should use the word buddy. Can you be their buddy? In his book, Harry Wong, in the first seven laws, the first days of school, he says, be friendly, be caring, loving, and sensitive, but do not be their friend. They have enough on their hands with their own friends. And the point is this. If friends do favors for friends. Can we have extra recess? Can we play for story? Can we skip math class today? We finished all our work. Can we go outside and play? And if you're their friend, of course, the answer is going to be yes every time. And, of course, they will keep asking until they find out something that they aren't supposed to do. But, you know, one day you'll have to say no to them as well. And then they get all upset because they thought you were their friends. Your friends don't give grades. Friends don't admonish each other. Friends don't tell each other what to do. They don't make you work hard and then grade your effort. They don't discipline you. They don't put brooms in front of the doors. they don't discipline you. That's the teacher's job. Be the teacher. Be an example for them. Don't join in the debate about which kind of truck is the best, because then there's no one to end the argument. Oftentimes we fool ourselves into thinking that if we just let the students do what they want, then they will like us. And think back to your teenage years. Did you always like your parents? Did they ever tell you no? I know there were some times. There was one time in particular where the youth were getting together every Monday evening for a softball game. And I remember one time Dad thought, we just were together, played softball recently. He thinks that we spend enough time together. I think it better if you wouldn't go this time. I don't really want you going to the softball game. That was pretty hard for me. I was pretty upset at my dad. But looking back now, I respect him for that. So do the right thing. Make the right decisions. Don't let the fear that they're not going to like you keep you from doing your job as a teacher. And we'll talk more about this later. The second thing is getting discouraged. Proverbs 13 verse 12 says, hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life. We talked about, you know, high expectations. High expectations are wonderful. You need to have high expectations for the school year, for your students, but don't become discouraged if it doesn't happen the first year. Just like a romance novel where everything always works out perfectly and the handsome young man and the stunningly beautiful girl always get married and live happily ever after. That's not real life. It's dangerous to think like that. If all your expectations are met this year, then you probably weren't expecting enough. So have high expectations, but don't be discouraged if they don't all happen the first year. And I'll be repeating some things that were said already. If you hear things several times this week, you know it's probably something important. So here's another one that's been said. Don't try to be someone else or copy another teacher. Not all of us can teach like Larry or like Brian. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. You know, Peter, when he when he went to the lame man, and the lame man was asking for money, Peter said, "Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have give I thee." Such as we have, that's what we give. Now, Peter, he must have been a teacher as well, because he said, "Silver and gold have I none." You'll get that in a couple years. An experienced teacher once gave me some advice the first year of teaching. He said, when people ask you how's it going, be careful about answering them, because sometimes the first couple weeks can be pretty tough. Don't judge yourself by the first couple weeks. Wait until you've taught 6 months to decide how it's going, because it just takes time to get used to it's a totally different schedule and a totally different lifestyle. The third thing is letting little things affect your emotions. And it's probably especially to the ladies. Ladies are usually a bit more emotional than men. Now, I know there's some emotional men as well, but there's strengths and there's good things and bad things to that. Like Aaron was saying, I think, that wasn't Aaron, it was Jacob, about the lady teachers being able to tell when there's cliques among the girls. I remember I had that exact same thing happen. There was things going on among the girls. I didn't have a clue about it, but the lady teachers, they saw it way before I did. So they're more sensitive to things like that. But then the downside of that is sensing things and being hurt or being whatever by them. This is a story from my wife's experience of teaching. I hope she doesn't mind if I tell it. But one day she was teaching and there was a boy, I guess, came in from recess, and she noticed that his pockets were just really bulging, and she asked him, what's in your pockets? And here they were just full of acorns. I guess he was planning to do them to do his math work or something, maybe. But anyway, so she told him, well, you need to go outside and get the acorns out of your pockets. So, he obediently goes outside and is gone. Doesn't come back in. And so she's, what's going on? So she, I guess, goes out of the classroom and goes to the door and looks out the window. And here he's out there, kind of upside down on his, trying to put his legs up in the air. And she's like, what's going on? And the acorns won't come out of my pockets. And he was very much a class clown, probably. But she could have taken that and be like, he's being rebellious. He needs a spanking or whatever. She could have taken that real seriously and let it ruin her day, perhaps. And I don't know, maybe he was being a bit rebellious, but I think he was just trying to be funny, too. Boys will do that, unfortunately. And don't take things too seriously. Or maybe they just go on and on about how much they enjoyed the substitute teacher that they had the day before. And, the substitute teacher gave them candy and extra recess. And it can be easy you can easily feel like that they don't like me and they would much rather have the substitute teacher. But that's just the way it is. They will always like the substitute teacher better, probably, than you. I don't know. Maybe not always, but don't let that affect you. That doesn't mean they don't like you or anything. The fourth thing is feeling too responsible for your students. It's not your job to carry the students on your back. And it is very depressing to see failing grades. I've been there. And yes, while we must do something about it, we can't allow those grades to make us feel like a failure to the extent that we want to give up. Teaching is about a lot more than grades. Warren Buffett said, games are not won by watching the scoreboard. So that's the students' grades. Don't let that determine who you are. Yes, we always work for improvement. We do our sustainable best. So what's sustainable best? I think I could jump on top of this thing, jump on top of the suitcase, and probably punch a hole through the ceiling and get into the attic if a big enough monster came in the door. But that's not sustainable. That's not something that I can just do very easily. You can probably run 10 miles an hour, but how long can you do that? How long can you keep that up? Do your sustainable best. Even Jesus had a student that failed. We do the best we can. Being too perfectionistic. How many of you filled in every blank so far on the handout sheet? Or how many of you make sure that you do every time you have a handout sheet? So probably, and that's me too, probably you may have to work on that about being too perfectionistic. How much time do we spend checking over the students' work? How much time do we agonize about whether or not to count a problem wrong? Or maybe it should be just a half wrong, or maybe we should just count it right. Do we spend too much time on that? You know, is one percentage point going to make that big of a difference? And then we'd end up not having enough time for important things like studying for the next day's lesson. And I'm not saying we should be careless at all, but the problem with wanting things to be perfect is that so often then when we're not, we become discouraged. Again, do your sustainable best. You will get wore out if you keep running your fastest all year long. And it can be overwhelming to think of teaching all these different subjects. You know, you won't be able to teach every subject perfectly the first year. This is something that a much wiser teacher told me. Focus on one subject. Choose one subject that you like, especially the first year. What's your favorite subject? Choose that subject and really teach it well. You know, you teach the other ones, but you spend extra time with one subject. And then the next year, you can choose another subject. And you can have two subjects you teach well. And by the time you're teaching, you've taught 6 years, then you can teach everything just perfectly. But no, not quite like that. But focus on one thing. Don't try to get everything perfectly the first year. Resisting advice or not asking for advice or help. There's a story in The Seven Laws of the Learner that I would like to read. These particular trout are very difficult to catch, he said. They suck in your fly, sense the hook, and immediately spit it out. You have to set the hook in that split second or he's gone. Do you think you can do that? Of course, I replied. After all, hadn't I caught all kinds of fish in lakes, ponds, and the ocean? Trout fishing in the Colorado Mountains would be a snap. The guide continued his instructions. If you cast over there and let your fly float downstream about 20 or 30 feet, you'll probably get a few bites. I did as he had said, but nothing happened. Within seconds, he said, you missed one, and a moment later, there, you missed another one. What on earth are you talking about? I hadn't felt or seen anything. You don't believe a couple trout actually bit your hook, do you? I guess he couldn't miss my look of skepticism. Let me have your pole, and I'll show you what I mean. On the next cast, he caught a big old trout right where my fly had been. I couldn't believe my eyes. Over and over again, our trusty guide worked with us. He would encourage us by saying, it's in the feel of the pole and the fly's movement in the water. You've got to learn to tempt the trout. Nonetheless, hours went by without my catching a fish, and I was beginning to lose hope. Then all of a sudden, I began to catch those trout right where we had fished earlier. I could now feel the river. Everything he said began to click. What a thrill! Later that afternoon, a young teenager carrying a large red and yellow tackle box climbed down the bank where we were fishing. We smiled encouragingly. But then he took out some large lures used to catch bass and even saltwater fish, but certainly not trout. Our guide worked his way up to the young kid and began to instruct him about that those lures didn't appeal to trout, but a certain kind of fly did. That young man told the guide to get lost. He'd fish with his favorite lures and he'd catch the fish just like he did back home. Soon our guide led us around the bend to a different patch of water that moved much more swiftly. He began to search through his fishing vest for a particular fly. He smiled when he found a couple of them. These flies are the only ones I know that will catch the trout in this section of the river. I made them last night just for this spot. They're heavy enough to sink into that strong current and they'll tempt those trout every time. He was right. We changed flies and immediately started catching larger trout. After a while, we returned to where that young man was fishing. He hadn't caught any fish yet and was obviously frustrated. Stupid fish, he exclaimed. They just aren't biting. I hate fishing. Our guide was a master fisherman. As the afternoon passed and we paid close attention to his instruction and his example, we slowly became more and more effective trout fishermen. Just as he'd said, it's all on the right lure on the end of your string and the right action on the pole. The fish are always there and can always be caught if you know how. Now, what was the problem with the young man? Okay. Anything else?
Proud.
It's proud. That's right. That is a huge, huge mistake that teachers can make. Thinking we know just how to do it and not asking for advice. There was actually one teacher, I didn't know him personally, but I know someone who knew him, and I guess someone talked to him about his teaching, And he said, when he was in school, he had a different teacher every year that he was taught. Every year he had a different teacher. And he just took the best from each teacher, and he's applying all of it now to his school teaching. And he was having some problems, and was not willing to listen. And needless to say, that teacher did not make it through the school year. Don't be that way. Please listen to advice. People come talk to you. They want to help you. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain into wise counsel. The second main area of mistakes that teachers sometimes make is ignorance of technique. And you remember the banana illustration? If I gave this banana to somebody that had never seen a banana before, and they would take a huge bite out of it, they would very likely not like bananas very well. But it's simply just not quite knowing how to do it right. There's a certain way we have to eat a banana, and then it can taste good. But just a big bite of a banana is not going to be good at all. So know the right techniques for doing things. One area is expecting the books and gadgets to do the teaching for you. Don't ever blame the books on a lack of learning. It doesn't matter if you use Rod and Staff or Christian Light or Abeka. The books are not going to do the work for you. You still have to be willing to buckle down and work. How much time do we spend on our phones, maybe looking up? And there's nothing wrong with researching things and trying to find interesting things for our students, but don't waste too much time on your phones. That can be a huge pitfall. Second thing is not knowing the sequence of class presentation. Like I think it's been said already, start with review before you teach the lesson. Make sure they know what a noun is before you start teaching them about direct objects. Don't assign the lesson and then the next day, or assign the lesson and they go back and do it, and then the next day after where you're checking their work, you see they totally missed it, and so the next day then you have to teach the lesson. Make sure they understand it before you assign it so that they can get it right the first time. Have the students read the lesson first before they come to the class table. If they come to the class table and they have no idea what the lesson is about, it's going to take a lot more time to teach the lesson. The next thing is giving too much or too little work. And this is a very tough one to call. And we talked about this yesterday some. Often at the beginning of the year, they're working at maximum capacity. Towards the end of the year, they slow down. It's hard to know when a student is doing the best they can. And for different students, it's going to be different. Some students can reach up here, and some students it might be down here. We have to be willing to be flexible and recognize when students are working at their best. It's like making homemade ice cream. When you dump the fluids in there and the ice cream maker starts going and starts spinning, there's a sound that it makes. And as it's getting done, you're listening for the sound to change. And after a while, the sound starts, it's and once the sound is just right, once that is really getting tough, then you know to shut it off so you don't burn the engine up. And it's the same way with your students. Listen, once they start, let them whine for a little bit maybe, but once the whining gets, you know, not quite tears, but somewhere there, then it's time to stop and the ice cream is done then. Assigning without motivating. One question that every teacher is going to hear is, maybe you know it already, what's the question that every teacher hears? I heard someone say it, I think. Why do we have to do this? Exactly right. Or when will I ever use this? That can be really intimidating to a new teacher. And be careful about answering that one right away. It actually might be wise to have a prepared answer to give them. Larry, do you have an answer you give your students on when they ask that, or what do you do?
In algebra.
Put you on the spot.
It's just not safe to always answer that question.
Right. Most of the time, they're actually not really wanting to know why they have to do this. They just don't want to do it. And so answering it right away can be a waste of time. But as much as possible, give them real-life examples. When you're teaching this, give them real-life examples of how they're going to use this. Use their names as you're working through the problems. You know, Sally had five pieces of candy, and she shared three with Jane, and so how many does she have left? Or whatever the case might be. Talk, if they like horses, talk about horses. If you have five horses and every two horses needs 3 acres of pasture, How many acres will you need for the five horses? Or how many square feet are there in an acre? And how much fence will it take to fence in the land for five horses? Make practical problems with things that they enjoy. Or maybe their father's a mini barn builder or whatever, and you can talk about work that their father does and how their father probably uses this in their work. So they see, yeah, I'm going to use this someday. Don't just make the problems abstract where they can't relate to them. Another one is thinking for the students. And I told the story yesterday. When I was in fifth grade, at lunchtime, I handed my orange to my teacher to peel for me. And by the end of lunchtime, I kind of forgot about it. Then at the end of lunchtime, I was like, where's my orange? And here he had eaten the orange as well as peeling it. And that's sometimes what we do as teachers. We peel the problem, and then we figure it all out, and then we just give them the answer. And that's totally ruining the taste of success for the students. Don't ever tell them the answer. Help ask them questions. Make them think. Get them, you know, to allow them to taste the success of figuring out the problem. The one who is working is the one who is learning. Let them do the science experiment. Let them make mistakes and then try to fix the mistake. Ask lots of questions. Again, the one that is working is the one that is learning. If you as the teacher are doing all the thinking and figuring out the problem, then you're the one, only one that's learning. Probably the students are not learning. The third area is poor planning. And again, this goes back into preparation again. Make sure you prepare correctly. The first thing in that is neglecting important things to do urgent things. And here's an example. Just imagine you're on the way to the airport and you're running a bit late, and halfway there you notice you're almost out of fuel. So what do you do? Should you stop and fill up your gas tank, or just book it for the airport as hard as you can go and hope you don't run out of gas before you get there? Which is more important, getting to the airport on time or filling your tank up with gas? Probably filling your tank with gas. I mean, getting to the airport seems very urgent, but if you run out of gas, you're not gonna get there on time regardless. So, and that's how it is with school. School duties can seem very urgent sometimes, but what is more important? Having your morning devotions or getting those report cards done that you're supposed to hand out today? Or what about going to prayer meeting? Or helping a co-teacher, a friend who's struggling? Don't neglect the important things in life. Take time to pray. Take time to talk to your friends. It was already mentioned, don't leave your friends behind when you start teaching school. You need your friends. And take time to talk with them. Maybe it means you won't get all your schoolwork done, but take time to talk with your friends or your students, and don't neglect the important things for the urgent things. Next, failing to allow for the unexpected. Make sure you take time to try the experiment first on your own. When I was teaching one time, we were going through the Chronicles of Narnia, and in there it talks about Turkish delight. And so I thought it'd be just a great idea to make Turkish delight one day. So I brought the ingredients, and we started off the day. It's quite a process of pouring sugar into water and heating it up and a bunch of different things. It actually takes a lot longer than what you think. And I tried to rush it because we were running out of time. And at the end of the day, the Turkish delight ended up being just some kind of gooey mess that was not really edible, and it was kind of a flop. I should have tried it myself ahead of time before I just went and tried it. But we had fun anyway, I guess. They still learned something from it, hopefully. Not planning in enough detail. Do some of the problems yourself. Again, this was mentioned already, but just thinking through the problems is okay, but sometimes working through each step will uncover a problem that you otherwise would have missed. And worrying about having enough to say during class. If you get finished early, wonderful. Don't keep on talking if you don't have anything else to say. If you tell your students you're finished and then you keep on talking, you're finished anyway. All right, the next section is ineffective discipline. Being afraid to discipline for fear the students will not like you. Students want you to take charge. They expect you to deal with misbehavior. If you don't, you will lose their respect. I had a student that he was being disrespectful in class, and I remember dealing with it. And then later, a couple days later, the dad came to me, and he told me, you know what? He had a brother in school as well. In fact, there was four children from that family in my class. And the older brother, he said, my other son came to me and told me that just really appreciates the way Derek, the way you handled that with the younger boy. He saw it and he appreciated it, that I dealt with it. And it was just a confirmation to me. The other students, they actually want you to deal with that so things can go back to being normal. If you have a student that's misbehaving, it can just totally ruin the class for everyone. So they expect you to deal with it. If you don't, you'll lose their respect. Adding rules or procedures after problems arise. Try to create general rules that cover every type of misbehavior. You know, any of y'all raise dogs to sell? Okay, a couple of y'all. So, dogs, for some reason, I guess people don't like dogs with long tails, right? So, any of y'all cut off the tails when they're born? Sounds really cruel, but it's probably a bit painful, but it's a quick procedure and it's done. But when you cut off the tail, do you just snip off 1 inch and then maybe a week later snip off another inch and then a week later snip off another inch? No, you cut off the tail in one whack and then it's done. But sometimes we do this as teachers. For example, the students start messing around after recess and it takes them longer each day for them to come in. Pretty soon you ring the bell and 5 minutes later, or 6 minutes later, finally everyone's back in their seats again. So you make a rule, okay, you have to be back in 1 minute after I ring the bell. Or students start racing out the door and there's this log jam at the door. And so you make a rule, okay, we're gonna dismiss by aisles this time. Or another example, at the class table, maybe they start poking each other at the class table, you're not allowed to touch each other at the class table, but then they start just squeezing tightly against each other. Okay, so thou shalt not press against thy neighbor at the class table. You know, you're just cutting off the dog's tail 1 inch at a time. And I realize there are times when there is a situation where you have to address and you have to, but as much as possible, have those things ready at the beginning of the year. In Michael Linsing's Smart Classroom Management Plan, he gives four rules, just four simple rules that cover pretty much everything you could possibly imagine. Number one is listen and follow directions. Number two, raise your hand before speaking or leaving your seat. Three, respect your classmates and your teacher. And four, keep your hands, feet, and objects to yourself. So just four simple rules is all you need to have. And again, it's not so important what the rules are, or I would recommend not having very many of them, but the main thing is that you consistently and calmly enforce them. Now, things like cheating, lying, even mocking, I would be pretty quick to be that's a spanking. Especially if you've talk to them at least once and explain to them. They know exactly what this is. Stuff like that is, I'm talking about smaller things. In this lesson in discipline, let me read you another excerpt from Miss Bearcombe. The worst of the hard nuts was Lenny Sopel. He was a big and tough and bearded. He was big and tough and bearded already, very much in the know about engines, baseball statistics, and older women. He had a way of muttering wisecracks half under his breath when girls recited. At first, they reached only to people in the surrounding seats. Then one day, Leela Crocker went down the aisle, and Lenny said in a loud whisper that shook the room like an east wind, "Oh man, I wish I had that swing in my backyard." Miss Bearcombe stopped listening to the girl at the study table. The girl stopped talking. Leela fled to the wastebasket and back to her seat, her face scarlet. The room became as silent as a tomb in a pyramid. Miss Bearcombe looked at Lenny for a long time, and he locked eyes with her, ready for a showdown. "What are you thinking about, Lenny?" she asked at last, rather softly for her. "Nothing." He could say that one word as though it were the nastiest in the language. "Absolutely nothing."
"Well, I'm thinking about something," she said, still calm and relaxed. "You come in at 3 and I'll tell you about it. In the meantime, stand up."
"What for? What'd I do?"
"Stand up, please."
Lenny hesitated. Again, it was one of her simple, inescapable requests. He slid out into the aisle and stood up. Miss Bearcombe went back to her work with the girl at the table. Lenny started to sit down once, but she gave him a steady eye and he straightened up again. He had to stand by his seat throughout the rest of the afternoon. We kept looking at him, waiting for him to say something. Lenny couldn't seem to think of anything to say. And the story continues, but we don't have time for more. But notice how she handled that, calmly and effectively. She didn't raise her voice.
And it wasn't really even a that complicated of a punishment, but he had to do something, he had to obey, and he had to keep doing it until she said to stop. You can even just put them in time out, where you just have them go to a certain place in the auditorium, in the classroom, where they still have to keep doing their work, they have to keep listening, but they aren't allowed to participate in anything. It doesn't have to be a complicated punishment, but you need to deal with things as they come up. Over-lecturing instead of disciplining. This is something, maybe it was probably a problem that I had, that I don't like to discipline, so we just lecture instead, thinking that we can argue enough with them and convince them that this is what they're supposed to do just by talking to them. You know, now Johnny, you know it's wrong to get mad when your team is losing. So you're not going to do that again, right? Great, problem solved, right? And it's okay to give a warning after the first time, but don't just keep warning time after time. If a student is disrespectful, deal with it right away. If a student is a poor sport, deal with it right away. Postponing the discipline only causes the students to lose respect for you. Like a disease, it will soon spread to the other students, and the problem will become much bigger. Brian Tracy, in his book, don't remember the title of the book, but he says, when you must eat a frog, get it done. This stuff, like frogs, doesn't get prettier or more pleasant by either ignoring it or anticipating it. And he says, if there's two frogs to eat, make sure you eat the uglier one first. It doesn't make it easier to keep postponing it. That's kind of like discipline. The next thing is trusting the students too much. The Bible says, watch and pray. I know they look like angels, but they are 100% human. And there was one time, I think Jonathan Erb said in his class, he decided to do that. So he kept his eyes open during prayer, and here there was one student that was trying to stand on his hands on top of his desk during prayer. And so he learned something. I had a girl in she was a fourth grade girl, and she was the youngest student in my class. She was so sweet, and so I thought that she couldn't do anything wrong. Didn't seem like it to me. But one day I found out that she was sliding her book under the desk to the next student's desk, and other student was writing in answers for her on problems that she couldn't solve. What in the world? I thought, okay. They are 100% human. Don't trust them too much. Maybe a good way to say would be, we trust them until they prove otherwise, depending on the age of them. But don't be, it's kind of like parents. When someone tells me that my child did something wrong, I just about can't believe it, because, you know, we think our children are always just the greatest, best behaved children. Oh, we soon find out different, though. The next thing is not communicating with the parents or school board, especially the parents. Be very quick to talk with the parents. Include positive and negative feedback. And like Brian said, you know, it's like putting money in the bank. You want to put money in the bank so you can draw out if you need to. Make it a goal to talk to one of the parents every week, I would say, at the very least. Parents like when you call them and talk to them about things. Well, they want to know, especially now that I have a child in school. I want the teacher to tell me when there's something going on. I'd much rather have them tell me when it's still small. And you don't even have to propose a solution. You don't have to ask for advice. Just simply telling them what happened in a clear, unbiased way, that's a huge help for the parents. Parents will really appreciate that. The last thing I want to talk about is moral failure. And this is something that it's difficult to talk about, but it's very important. What you do outside the classroom does affect your teaching. I think oftentimes, for me, I would think that, well, it's nothing at school. It's not going to affect my classroom or my teaching or anything, but it does. It will render you powerless. Moral failure will render you powerless. And I knew a church leader, bishop, who was failing in his personal purity. And there was no one else involved. No one knew that anything was wrong. It was something that had been happening over a period of a couple years. Not like it was just a weekly thing, but moral failure happening multiple times over a couple years. And no one knew that anything was wrong. But during those years, there were some issues that came up in the church. And he tried to work with those issues and address those issues, but he was unable to. In Psalm 66, verse 18 says, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. And That is very true. If we have iniquity in our hearts, God will not hear us. He will not answer our prayers when we ask Him for wisdom or strength to handle a certain situation. Moral failure is a stronghold that the devil will use to render you powerless as a teacher. The next thing is find help. It's not something that you can handle on your own. Find help. We are only mirrors. We're just reflecting God's light. So when we take our focus off Jesus, we will no longer be able to reflect or shine His light. And that bishop, he was my father-in-law. And he came to the place where he realized that he was not being effective in his calling. And he was willing to do whatever it took to have peace. And you know, he came to me one day and told me what was going on. And he told the other ministers, he confessed it at a brethren meeting. And I'm sure it took a lot of humility for him to confess that and step down as bishop, even quit preaching. And he would go to other churches, you know, visiting, and people would ask him to preach. And what's he supposed to say? You know, it was something, especially in a position like that, it's not easy to just to keep that. I'm sure a lot of people found out about it. But he was a tremendous example to me and to many others. And 2.5 years ago, he passed away. And the testimony at that funeral was that he had a clear testimony. We know he was right with God. He was willing to do whatever it takes. And that's, again, just a challenge to all of us. If we're involved in that, let's get help. Do whatever it takes to have peace. Doesn't matter who you are. Satan is out to make you fall however he can. And I think he spends extra time working on people in authority, like teachers. If he can get you to fail, render you powerless in the classroom, just think of all the students that are going to be affected because of your failure. Again, don't think that it's not going to affect your teaching, because it will. Okay, lastly, I'd like to look at some positives for first-year teachers. What are some advantages of being a first-year teacher? You know, you might look at all these experienced teachers here and feel like, you know, how can I do this? And you should, rightly, in a sense, but there are lots of advantages to being a first-year teacher. I'm just curious, if anybody has any ideas, what would be some advantages that you have as a first-year teacher? Okay.
They have no mistakes.
Okay, you got a clean slate. That's right. The first one I have down is freshness. Everything is fresh and exciting for you. You know, you're learning right along with the students. And actually, if you're a new teacher, whether it's the first year or fifth year, if you're a new teacher to a new batch of students, they actually really behave well for the first couple weeks anyway. And they really do want to please you. They want you to like them probably as much as you want them to like you. So don't lose that. Keep that fresh, exciting feel to school. Big advantage that first-year teachers have. Another one is willingness to learn. And again, I hope that's the way you feel, that you're open and willing to learn. Listen to other teachers. Don't ever lose that openness for taking advice. Never be ashamed to beg, borrow, or steal ideas from other teachers. Take whatever you can and use it. That's totally okay. Third one is you have a positive attitude. Some of us that have been in this business for a long time need a checkup from the neck up. There's some stinking thinking in there that affects our attitudes. That's a Jonathan Erb quote as well. Sometimes we get cynical about student issues. You know, we know this student, they have problems with their spelling, and we just get cynical about it. We know, yeah. I expected that he was going to get a 50% on his spelling words, and that's not good at all. We've got to go at it with this time he's going to get a 95% or 100%. Get our attitudes right. That's for teachers that have taught a while. It's easy to get cynical about things, so you don't have that cynical or knowledge of students that they've been failing in a certain area. And the last thing I wrote down was sympathy. You can, if you're not too old, hopefully you can remember the struggle you had in learning these new concepts. Teachers that have taught for years might think, you know, as he's teaching, you all should know this already. I've taught it 3 years in a row already. But they're learning it for the first time, so you can sympathize more with them. In fact, how many of you struggled when you were in school? Like, was school hard for you? Okay, it's about what I expected. Most times teachers are people that didn't struggle in school. But honestly, I think those of you that struggled in school will probably, in some ways, be a better teacher because you can relate with those students that are struggling and having a hard time getting it. To those of you that didn't struggle, you can still be a good teacher too. But just keep in mind that it's not as easy for them to learn this stuff as it was for you, maybe. So in closing, well, the takeaway again, be aware of common pitfalls. That's the first step in staying out of them. So in closing, you're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. We all do. The only dumb mistake that you can make is the one that you just keep on making. So listen to advice from others. Stop. Look, listen, pray often. You can be dismissed.